Welcome to Interchain FM, where we dive into the frontier of the blockchain space. We're now in the third generation of blockchain tech, where a burgeoning multi-chain ecosystem is about to explode into what we call the decentralized web. Where Ethereum is to the mainframe computing era of the internet, Cosmos is to the PC era. If you're seeking alpha in the Cosmos ecosystem, look no further. This is the destination for your exponential learning experience. Interchain FM is where you can get the download on all of the high signal projects building bridges to one another and how you can participate in the future of the internet. I'm your host, Chango Unchained. We're talking to Sergey Gorbunov today about Axlar Network. And Axlar is an interoperability protocol. We're going to cover everything. He's ex-Algorand, so we'll talk about that as well. So welcome, Sergey.
Hey, great to be here.
Give us an idea about your background. I'm interested in knowing more about your history in Algorand.
My background, originally worked in some distributed systems, software-defined networking, did a few projects there. I went to grad school to study formal cryptography at MIT, where I worked a lot on lattice-based cryptography, designing new protocols for like multi-party computation and things like that. By the end of the grad school, I was looking for, a new exciting area to work on, and blockchains were just starting up. It was 2013, 2014. So got super excited to work in the space, started to collaborate with Silvio Micali on some of the early, ideas behind the Algorand protocol. Yeah, spent a bit of time as a faculty at the University of Waterloo as well, doing research in blockchains, distributed systems, cryptography, but really was excited kind of just by the space and how everything was moving. So I took a leave from the university and then spent full time with the Algorand team and helping to build out and launch that platform. And then, shortly after the launch, we just saw a number of other amazing ecosystems being built in parallel. And I thought, connectivity across them is just going to be fundamental. And to me, that seemed like a really interesting problem to work on.
Was there any overlap between you and Ethan Buckman? Because you guys were both at the University of Waterloo around the same time.
So I did not know him at the university. They did come there a few times, I think, when we were starting the Cosmos projects to give talks. And like we've met a few times here and there. Yeah, I did know him through the university, but I knew him like from the kind of Cosmos and other projects that we were starting to build on the side.
And what got you motivated to solve blockchain interoperability? That was early on, right? Like you were thinking about this circa, like around the similar time as when Cosmos was being incepted. And so I just want to know how you got onto that train of thought, similar to how like, I guess Jay and Ethan did.
Yeah. So I guess a few things. So one, after launching, the Algorand platform, we just had this bootstrapping problem that we saw where like we built this ecosystem and some developers, wanted to come and build applications on top of it. But they were like, well, I want to get liquidity from other chains, right? I want to get composability and be able to call, other ecosystems or other smart contracts and get the distribution from them. And so there was really like a bootstrapping problem that we faced there where ideally for us, we didn't want to build anything with respect to interoperability. We wanted to just call somebody and say, okay, just plug in Algorand, right? Like, and tomorrow or the next week, it would be available and our developers could benefit from it. So that was the original motivation from it. But then as we kind of started to go deeper and deeper in the topic, already after starting Axlar and some of the early days with it, we just realized that sort of interoperability on its own, it's a very long journey. It's a sort of set of stacks and protocols that have to be built along the way, everything from the routing layer, transport layer, application layer protocols, better APIs for the dApp builders and so on and so forth. To me, you're just exciting, right? You work with different ecosystems, you look at different protocols, what they did, you figure out, what is the best way to connect them all together? How does this infrastructure should look like? A great problem, a complicated problem, but that's what keeps us going.
The theme that I thought of for this podcast is building compatibility between the incompatible. So what's interesting is that you're building a bridge between proof of work blockchains with UTXO sets like Bitcoin, Handshake, over to the Cosmos ecosystem, which is completely different. Cosmos ecosystem has finality, uses account-based model instead of a UTXO-based model. So how do you build compatibility between that? There's a subsection to that, which is even more if you're building interoperability between Bitcoin and Bitcoin-like forks, what about the subset of Bitcoin forks that kind of changed certain parameters around, right? So like Litecoin, which is like Tenebrix fork, which is kind of dissimilar because they changed the hashing algorithm. What sort of proof of work blockchain are you going to be supporting in what capacity?
Great question. I think there's a lot of, to go deeper on that. That was actually one of the reasons we started with Axel Network, is that there's nothing specific that makes it, as a connecting layer to just proof of work, right? So for us, the way we designed the stack is to make it composable, right? And expose the building blocks that are needed to connect with different ecosystems as easier as possible. So Axel as itself is sort of a network that consists of all kinds of connections, and we instantiate some of these connections. But what we have spent a lot of time on is just figuring out what are these building blocks that you need to make easier to build new connections, right? Like Axel does support IBC, and there's through the Cosmos ecosystem. It's like amazing to talk through all the Tendermint-based chains right now. Future could be more chains, other protocols like Bitcoin, whatever forks of it. We just think, what is the basic set of components that we need to interact with those ecosystems? And it really comes down to a few things. So one, you need almost like a kind of a read oracle, and you need a write oracle, essentially. That's like, let me simplify it, right? So a read oracle means that you need to, if you want to interoperate from chain A to chain B, somewhere along the path, somebody needs to read information from chain A, and somebody needs to write information on chain B. And then you can ask, well, what are these objects that are doing these read and write operations? I think Light Clients is one example, right? So Light Clients and Tendermint that IBC is based on is an example of a functionality that you can put on chain, pass it some read information, and it's going to allow you to do some write operations to, mint your assets and so on and so forth. For other chains where these Light Clients are sort of not available, like Bitcoin, you need different types of protocols. This is where Axler as this communication hub comes in, is that the validators of the Axel network can actually query nodes of other chains in order to be able to perform read operations. And then they run various multi-party protocols in order to run a consensus and agree on these write operations that need to be executed on the destination chains. And so we're exposing these as building blocks at the core, so that validators can query as many chains as they want. They can register on as many chains as they want. And as a developer, you get to build this application layer kind of interoperability logic on top of the Axel network to make those read and write requests composable. So if you have a fork of Bitcoin or Litecoin where you have specific parameters, you can just either deploy a module to the Axel network and use the building blocks that we already built to not have to rebuild a lot of the connectivity tissues. Down the line, you'll be able to do even simpler things like deploy like a smart contract that gets to leverage, these read and write oracles that we're going to expose to design your own logic for how to finalize a particular chain, how to work with those parameters and things like that.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, Axlar is a blockchain, and all it does is its job is to bridge into, many of the largest ecosystems. The validators of this proof of stake chain, if I understand this correctly, are running SPV nodes of proof of work blockchains like Bitcoin, as well as Light Clients on Tendermint. And what they really are just running witnesses to these chains to be able to read off of them, and then to be able to either submit checkpoints or proofs that something happened on another blockchain. So the write is happening on your Axlar blockchain, and the read is being operated as Light Clients on all these various supported chains.
One more component to this, right? So to read information, Axel nodes just like query RPC endpoints, they run a consensus, they get to finalize requests. So that's what allows us to work with both proof of work or proof of stake chains, where we have kind of a finality gadget, you can think of it that way, that allows us to finalize requests, that Axel runs in multi-party protocols to agree on the messages that need to be posted on the other chains. And other chains, we have a notion sort of gateways. And those gateways are receiving messages as a pass-through layer and then execute various commands depending on what the user wanted to do in that message, like deploy a contract, so on and so forth.
So this is a pretty standard peg zone model in Cosmos. I don't know how familiar you are with the nomenclature, but then we publish this paper about a peg zone, which is exactly this, right? It's a chain that is a finality gadget for many different chains that are incompatible originally.
Yeah, and the way we kind of build the stack is that one of the key kind of a design goals, again, was to expose the right building blocks, right? Make sure it's easy to build your own like finality gadgets and really get like to many-to-many connectivity as opposed to like a pairwise connections.
And that's the type of solution that's needed in order to finalize blocks for probabilistic finality having chains like Ethereum or Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. You guys are in testnet. When are you going to have mainnet? You know, what's kind of the roadmap along the way?
We've been in testnet, since the summer, been through a few iterations. Right now, I think on the last version of testnet, we had like over 70 validators that are participating in the network. I think close to 1,000 like testnet users that are breaking things. Another 13,000, I think, that are on the wait list as we open up the testnet more and more. We have a few kind of applications that are built around the network. We have various like tooling, dashboards, monitoring capabilities we're setting up on the network right now. And the goal is to launch with initial integrations early next year and continue building the stack from there.
When that comes around next year, what does it support? So will it support Bitcoin and Bitcoin forks? And when I say forks, is it Bitcoin D, like Bitcoin Core, or does it also include alternative implementations of Bitcoin and subsequent forks of such alternative implementations? I ask because I'm particularly interested in Handshake, because Handshake is a fork of Bcoin, which is the JavaScript alternative implementation. So there's that. And then there's Doge, right? Like naturally, it makes sense to support Doge, but Doge is a fork of Litecoin, it's a fork of Tenebrix. And Tenebrix is just like slightly different than a Bitcoin fork. It's like Bitcoin, but tweaked a little bit with the hashing algorithm and with like a different retargeting interval and block size, you know, just like tiny little tweaks in the parameters. Are those going to be supported?
So I have not looked at all the variants of Bitcoin. I mean, I have to be honest, primarily for the same reason, like I said, like what we're trying to design is something that's just composable where, you know, if we don't support something, you can come in and, you know, use the building blocks that we have to push another module to support it. This is going to be an open network, right? And an open platform at the end of the day. For Bitcoin right now, you know, we've had it on a testnet mode for a while. You could transfer, you know, assets from Bitcoin to like Cosmos ecosystems, other EVM chains. Right now, we're actually doing an upgrade for it to be compatible with a new signature scheme for Bitcoin. So they did recently, you know, an upgrade where they can support Schnorr signatures, which is a lot more efficient than ECDSA. We had our protocol running on ECDSA for a while. So we're actually going to upgrade to that. That's going to make the whole network a lot more efficient and not have large kind of quadratic overheads on the network side. So certainly, you know, Bitcoin is of interest to us. For the other forks, I'm not sure. I think we'll have to see. But again, we'll invite like anybody that wants to come in on the, and build on the network, you know, take a Bitcoin module. If you have to tweak some parameters to support some other chains, like go ahead and feel free to do this, right? Like all the building blocks are going to be there. Validators will be able to just query RPC endpoints of this other chains that you want to support. Most of the logic is going to be there. There are some tweaks, but we looked at Dogecoin, you know, I think Sani really got excited by it. And so we looked a little bit, but the scripts there are not, you know, as flexible. So on Bitcoin side, when we were doing the design, we spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, various like recovery mechanisms, right? Like what happens if UTXO is corrupt? You still want to make sure, you know, the users don't lose their funds. So there are certain kind of fallback mechanisms you can do in Bitcoin scripts. Some of those things are not available, you know, in other forks. So you some of the opcodes, so you would have to tweak the scripts a little bit. Again, like I think our goal is to kind of build a network and show some demonstrations what we can do and then work with the rest of the community to build, you know, more integrations along the side.
Is this going to be compatible with Cosmos at the very beginning just because Axelar is a Cosmos SDK chain and it runs Tendermint? Yeah. Vanilla Tendermint?
Exactly, yeah. So the network has been built around the Cosmos SDK. We have kind of external processes that are working around it. But at the very core, kind of to make this interoperability, you need a reliable consensus. If you want to run like threshold protocols or even like multi-sig protocols, if you want to do it reliably, if you want to slash validators that are misbehaving and things like that, you need a consensus that you can kind of customize and work with. And so we build it around the Cosmos SDK. We do have IBC support, like I said, so we can take assets from Cosmos ecosystem, you know, Atom, Terra, Luna. You can also distribute them through Axelar to other EVM chains that will support and kind of get distribution for your assets and things like that as well. And we're going to leverage IBC to its full extent along the way as well.
Let's talk about the security model, because this has long been a huge issue with bridging proof of work chains over, which is, let's say, the amount of Bitcoin that is sent to the Axelar network blockchain. So the value under custody exceeds the value that is collateralized via staking. So then at that point, there is a direct incentive for validators to equivocate, right? For them, like, let's say 13 of them or however arbitrary amount of them to collude and then come and equivocate, and then they'll corrupt the chain. So what prevents that from happening? Is there like a set minimum threshold of like staking tokens that you are going to like compel them to stake? Or how do you prevent that attack from happening?
If you take a step back a little bit, right? Let's talk about just in general proof of stake networks like Cosmos chains on their own. I think there is a little bit of misconception in the community overall that kind of a lot of people think that like validators have something at stake. But for the most part, what validators have at stake is their reputation, right? Because if you look at a lot of proof of stake networks, most of them require very little like collateral from the validators themselves. Most of them actually have like, you know, zero or one, you know, token that you have to stake. And most of the stake that the validators are participating with is then delegated to them from the users. So what prevents me, like what incentive then do I have as a validator to operate nodes correctly and for all of us not to collude? Well, A, we're decentralized enough, right? There's many of us. And so kind of security is achieved through decentralization, and you know, B, whatever reputation they have built in the community. And I think even if you look at that, in all of the proof of stake networks, the validators set themselves and what they protect is much greater value than what they have at stake. In terms of economic value, at least, right? There's this other incentives, there's anti-collusion through decentralization and things like that. That has been really our guiding principle from day one, where we look at these things and say, well, A, anything you want to do, you know, in a robust way, you have to just have a decentralized network. We don't want to have bridging protocols with three, four guys just kind of running nodes between themselves. We need to support many, many validators. I think that's the security feature number one. Okay, you can't beat that, I think, right now in the ecosystem. And two, it's really kind of a optimizing and thinking along the same lines to set very high various like liveness and safety threshold on the protocol itself. So thinking about what is the minimal threshold of validators that's required to do operation X? What is the minimum number of validators that are required to do operation Y? And then how does that relate back to the stake that they have in those validators? Are those arbitrary validators with no staking at all? Are those, you know, top validators in the network that have most of the stake delegated to them? And sort of things like that. And so our guiding principles has been, let's maximize decentralization. And then like, let's think carefully how we set, you know, various parameters. But the economic security on its own, I think it would be misleading to, you know, require very large collateral or things like that from validators, because that's not even how proof of stake networks work. So I just don't see that as a viable path. You're always going to be limited to what you can transfer.
You mentioned that you are using, is it threshold signatures, and you're a cryptographer. So let's talk about that. What kind of cryptography are you introducing in here? Like what sorts of threshold are going to be needed in order for people to transact or what, decrypt transactions, whatever? Yeah, let's talk about that.
We're exposing all kinds of, you know, building blocks for multi-party protocols. You can run like basic multi-sigs, right? So allowing validators to kind of generate a common signature. Threshold cryptography is another protocol we have support for ECDSA. On the high level, what all of these protocols really do is just allow validators to generate a transaction such that a majority of them, whatever threshold you set, approve that transaction. So if we're doing a write request on a chain A, you need a majority of the validators to co-sign that in one way or another. Threshold cryptography is one way of doing this, where the resulting signature is small, and then you have to do kind of an interactive multi-party protocol to generate it. On the other hand, you have, you know, basic like BLS signatures, for instance, right, where there is non-interactive signature generation, and then you can aggregate a lot of signatures and generate one compact signature that you can put on other chains. And the way we build the network is like the cryptography and everything else is just, again, like a building block in the part of the network, right? So we have a few protocols that we're starting with now. You know, you can add BLS into it. We're going to add, you know, Schnorr signatures for, I think, Bitcoin. It's going to give great improvements. for some things, just probably multi-sigs are fine. And so it's just one of the building blocks for these write Oracle, like I said, right? So it's like, let's get all the validators, use this write Oracle with whatever protocol you need. And some of them may be different depending on the chain that you have, right? So some of them have ECDSA signatures, some other protocols have ED25519 signatures. And so you need those building blocks. And so we're going to try to expose like as many as we can as well.
And this is part of being composable with different and incompatible chains, right? To be able to support all these different primitives?
Yeah, exactly. Like at the very core, to post a transaction on one of these chains, you need to be able to sign it with the signature algorithm supported at the consensus layer. So in Bitcoin, it was ECDSA. Now they have Schnorr, which is, you know, a lot more efficient. Some chains have just the ED2519, like that's what we used like at Algorand.
And Cosmos, like, yeah. Tournament.
Cosmos supports both, right? I think you can actually kind of flip the model and, you know, you can also like extend your own signatures on top of Cosmos. We'll support as many as we can as we're building this. I think that's really the goal to make it more efficient because, again, they all have their own trade-offs, right? Like some are more not interactive than others. Some of them are easier to work with. Some of them introduce like higher gas costs. And so like there's a lot of trade-offs to think about.
Interactive meaning all of the validators who are signing need to be online at the exact same time synchronously in order to sign, right?
That's right. For ECDSA, that's the case. Like I said, like you could do, for instance, with BLS kind of non-interactive sign-in, right? And we did a lot of work on even standardizing BLS back when I was at Algorand. I actually hope a lot more chains start supporting it in the future because that would make, I think, the whole world a lot more efficient in the blockchain space.
That was definitely a research endeavor at Tendermint some years ago, right? We wanted BLS, but then this was, I don't know what happened with that. But if you're, you know, pioneering and building primitives, then maybe the SDK could just plug that in. That'd be ideal.
Yeah. I mean, I think like Celo supports, you know, BLS now, right? I think a few other chains are considering as well. So it would be good. Great to see. You can really compress a lot of this cryptographic material with BLS.
Veering off course here off of cryptography and onto just like tokenomics, right? Okay, so Axelar Network is going to have a token and everything, but by and large, just based on using all these different networks, so I've been really excited about Ohm forks and just like trying them out. And so a bridge is very clearly a piece of public good. And what tends to happen is either the core team builds the bridge as the means to get users onto their platform or their L1, like, and it just is that, right? So the bridge you're building is largely a public good. Where do you imagine the business use case comes from?
I'm with you like 100% that, you know, any bridge interoperability protocol is a public good, right? And I think one of the things we tried to build from day one is build sort of a network where validators, you know, are required to support as many chains as possible, right? Like we have an incentive kind of mechanism where the more chains you support, you know, the more rewards as a validator you get, and not trying to, you know, single out any particular like ecosystem or anything like that. Along the same side, I think as you start increasing interoperability, the amount of requests that is going to go from one ecosystem to another is going to greatly be increasing. You have various applications like DEXs across the ecosystem, Osmosis, you know, Uniswap, and so on and so forth, that a user is going to use more and more as we build this interoperability stacks. But interoperability networks like Axelar, you know, and others along the way will, the ones that are routing information and delivering information, effectively can take some transaction fees along the way if they need to cover, you know, the expenses and operations of the validator and manage their resources. So that's our thoughts right now as well.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that you are also allowing smart contracts to be built on this chain. Is that right?
I mean, not yet, but that's certainly, you know, something we're thinking through, not for the purpose that you come and build an application, but for the purpose that you can, again, like easier customize your interoperability with yet another ecosystem, right? So right now, for instance, you know, we have like an EVM module. Okay, so that supports an arbitrary like EVM chains. You can, you know, push connections as many as possible. We have a Bitcoin module we've been working with. You know, if you have your fork of whatever EVM chain or Bitcoin, we want to give you an easy ability to use our read and write oracles, the ones that we're building at the core layer, and customize your parameters easier and tweak them. So you could like push a governance module through the upgrade protocol at the Cosmos SDK layer. I think down the line, like, we want to make it even easier so you can just like customize a contract, right? Essentially, and say, okay, now I tweak my parameters. Here's my chain. I'm going to use the Axler interoperability stack, and then I have connections with whatever 20 other ecosystems.
So is it up to governance to decide what chains that it's going to support, or how is that decision-making process done?
So we haven't finalized all the decisions yet, I think, on this. But at the end of the day, yeah, Axler, you know, is a similar model based on the Cosmos SDK, where there is a governance token, right? Anybody can put a proposal, users and validators vote on it, and then, you know, the change is adopted. For integrations with new chains, effectively, three things have to happen right now. One, enough validators have to be able to query like RPC endpoints to do these read requests, right? So, and it's an opt-in for the validator. So as a validator, you say, okay, I like this chain, I'm going to, you know, vote on requests from it. I like this chain, I'm going to vote on it, and you get some rewards for it. Two, we just have to deploy this gateway on the destination chain. And you can think of it as kind of general contract that can accept read and write requests from both the applications on that chain and the Axel network. And finally, there needs to be like some logic for just routing from the source to the destination chain for this new chain that you're introducing, right? We have not finalized all the details how each one of these like components gets governed. The network itself can always be, you know, upgraded. You can push, you know, proposals at the consensus layer, but there are these other pieces that we have to like think through a little bit more.
So your EVM module, when you say that, is that the same as Ethermint, or did you build your own custom one for Axelar's purposes?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
FMS is using?
EVM module, I did not mean that it's where you put like Solidity contract. I meant it's the logic that allows us to route information across different EVM-based chains, right? So if you have, you know, Ethereum, Avalanche, whatever, Moonbeam, they're all kind of Solidity based, right? And there's underlying Ethereum virtual machine that's implemented to it. And so what I meant by EVM module, it's a module on Axel network that allows us to parse information from those chains and just route it to the right destination chain. It's not for the purpose of building contracts. It's a delivery layer. That's what I call the EVM module in this case.
All right. So it's not the Ethermint module in the Cosmos SDK, or it wouldn't be that?
No.
Okay, got it. I understand. There's another project, I don't know if you're aware of it, that's really similar to what Axelar is doing. It's just building interoperability between just proof-of-work chains and old historical chains. When I say historical, I mean XRP. So there's a blockchain called Flare, right? That project is actually integrating Doge, Bitcoin, Handshake, and XRP, I believe, as well as Ethereum. Have you heard of it?
I actually haven't heard too much about it, but we'll take a look.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's just a comparable project. They're doing something similar, but I guess they're not supposed to be a generic bridge for all blockchains. Just they whitelist a couple and they support them. But anyway, let me take some questions from the audience because there's a bunch of questions right now. So Chain Guys says, I have a question. BTC could be wrapped to ETH and other chains. Why BTC would ever come to Cosmos?
Great question. Well, I think what we have seen so far is that a lot of the demand from the Bitcoin like token holders to actually do something interesting with those assets, right? And being interesting, I mean, like, you know, lock it in a, you know, in a DEX, right? Like provide some liquidity using your Bitcoin or swap it for other assets. And in the Cosmos ecosystem, you know, we have Osmosis, right? That's kind of one of the primary DEXs right now. And I think there's definitely a lot of interest for the folks to take their Bitcoin and, you know, use it there, stake it, create interest in trading pairs, swap it for other assets. And I think, you know, I'm pretty excited, I think, for the coming years where the Bitcoin is going to, I think my view is there starts migrating more and more towards other platforms and actually being a useful asset as opposed to just a pure store of value. So I think that would actually be quite interesting to see.
There's another layer to this question, which is he's fundamentally asking about trust models because wrapped Bitcoin is a completely trusted bridge. And you send Bitcoin to a custodian, have them, the custodian is BitGo, and then BitGo wraps it, creates an ERC-20 out of it, and then sends it to the requisite ETH chain or ETH smart contract. So this model that Sergey is talking about is a trust minimized bridge because Axelar has, how many validators do you have? Is the standard 125?
We haven't said what is going to be on the mainnet, but yeah, you can kind of tweak the parameter anywhere from dozens to hundreds based on the Cosmos SDK.
The only reason that a bridged Bitcoin would be built this way is if you're trying to build a trust minimized bridge. Like, why else would you want a chain to do this if you could just wrap it through like a multi-sig and then create an ERC on the other side? So it is about trust minimization in this context and why that's important for it to come to Cosmos.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, though, if you're trying to bridge any asset from any decentralized platform to another decentralized platform, the interoperability or whatever solutions you're using have to be decentralized, right? Because if you're just taking something, you know, and put it in the custody of a central party, that party becomes your custodian, right? Like that party becomes your central point of failure. That party is effectively going to be, you know, your bank down the lines, right? So I think that it's really important for us and for the ecosystem to allow frictionless mobility of assets, right? No matter what they are. And I think through decentralized protocols and connecting through decentralized means is kind of the only way to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And this takes me back to my conversation with JP at ThorChain. We talked a couple of months ago, and it's this idea that we have to maintain and be pretty vigilant about maintaining the Bitcoin standard, which is it's so easy for us to get off of that standard, because if you just look at history with the gold standard, the majority of gold in the United States got requisitioned by the US government. And then because they had such grasp over that market, they were able to create the fiat system, which is say, hey, we're going to promise you're going to be able to redeem, you know, one note for like a requisite amount of gold. And then that promise was broken. And so what we want to prevent with creating just frictionless mobility of Bitcoin bridging in a trustless way is that, right? If any single custodian, like let's say BlockFi, Coinbase, any CEX, Binance, gets too much Bitcoin, they're able to create derivatives off of it. And then eventually over time, let's say like decades, they're able to create debt instruments that are ultimately not pegged to the Bitcoin standard. And then we lose that standard. And then all us normies are no longer going to have any Bitcoin ourselves. And yeah, we can no longer actually redeem real Bitcoin off of that exchange once that's happened.
Exactly. Yeah.
Max, the Frenchie asks, how much value do they predict will come to Cosmos through this Bitcoin bridge?
Good question. I have no idea. I think we'll have to wait and see. It really depends, you know, on the user interest. It depends on the, you know, incentive programs that are created by the applications across the ecosystem. So I don't think that's something I want to speculate on.
I mean, tangibly, I want to add on to that question, which is like, what would the user flow look like, right? So typically in the trusted model, what I would do is send my Bitcoin to BlockFi or BitGo, and then I get their interface, and then I just like manage my Bitcoin from there.
Yeah.
What would it look like in this case?
Yeah, so this is something we spend a lot of time thinking about. And kind of at the end of the day, like I said, interoperability is a sort of a stack of protocols that you need, right? Like you need the, you know, the core pipes and the connecting tissues, and you need application layer protocols to make it easier to use these assets, right? So on top of the Axel network and like different chains that we're integrating with, we're also working on this application layer protocols where if an application integrates with this protocol, then it will be able to access assets from other ecosystems, right? And similarly, it will allow users to access assets from other ecosystems in that application. Okay, so as an example, let me walk you through one theoretical flow that you could imagine seeing. Like when you go to Osmosis, right, you'd be able to serve, you know, click on like deposit button, right, and get like a deposit address where you need to send some coins. Once you send those coins there, through all kinds of, you know, routing and bridging layers that will facilitate, you just get that asset on the Osmosis chain. You know, you can interact with that asset, you can stake it, you know, you can provide LP positions into it, you can swap it, and then when you want to go back somewhere, you withdraw, right? And then you don't have to think about wrapping and unwrapping, kind of going through any centralized platform along the way. So that's one example of a user flow you can imagine. More interestingly, other flows that will allow you kind of applications to compose directly, right? So you can imagine Osmosis has some trading pairs, then there is another DEX that's built somewhere else. Maybe it has some other trading pairs. Kind of how do you compose them together? right? So if you have these different liquidity pools that are built on different ecosystems, if the application, again, integrates with the Axler application layer protocols, then you'll be able to kind of compose those trading pairs without having to hop from one chain to another. That's, I think, really strongly what I believe is that at the end of the day, users are not going to have to go through bridges. Okay, like any bridge in front end, I think, is a short-term solution that we'll probably still see in the space like for the next year. But I think as more and more applications integrate with higher level interoperability protocols, the users are going to get to a point where they have an asset, they see an application, just go and use it. And I think we have to work towards that goal.
Great. Eventually, the goal is to abstract the underlying blockchain so far away that the user doesn't even know what they're using. And that's when we have a network of networks, which is the Internet of Blockchains.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think there you have to be a little bit careful about to make sure that the assets are ended up on secure chains, right? You know, not just some arbitrary forks and the applications are deployed on correct chains. So we'll have to still make sure that the underlying infrastructure is visible, right? Where you can authenticate data, you can query the data if something goes wrong, you can verify information. That's still going to be critical, but the user experience has to be on a much higher level.
We would want something like allowing the users to toggle, like, you know, how trustless is your preference? And then like, what's your risk profile? And then like, all they do is toggle it. And then the underlying logic is going to say, okay, we're going to verify like, you know, this route and how many hops for them. And instead of having the users do their own research and whatever, they could just see like a lock icon and see that, okay, this has like, what is it? SSL cert.
Yeah.
This internet blockchain.
That'd be awesome.
Godorama asks, what kind of setup hardware is required to become a node or validator on Axlar?
To run a node, you know, it's a kind of a regular Cosmos SDK-based node, so not that much resources. You know, if you have kind of a four-core kind of standard desktop or server, that should be fine. For validator, there's definitely, you know, more resources that are involved, in particular, if you want to validate on other chains. So kind of configure, you know, RPC endpoints for whatever, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Avalanche, then you need to configure those nodes, expose the RPC endpoints, and then from the Axlar validator, query those endpoints. So there's definitely more resources on that. You know, I think on our website, we have specific recommendations. I would have to go back and check it.
Speaking of which, on your roadmap, how far along is something like Avalanche or Solana integration?
Avalanche integration, we actually already have, and we've been testing it. So, you know, it is an EVM compatible chain. So for us, it's like a dozen of commands that you run in the network to just integrate with those chains. So that's pretty straightforward. Solana is quite interesting. The stack there is, you know, a little bit different. So we're looking into that right now.
What would this imply for developers who are looking for EVM compatible chains? So like, let's say Axlar launches with the support before we have Evmos or before we have any EVM compatibility within Cosmos. Is there some way that they could bridge compatibility through Axlar? Or I guess you would translate smart contracts through Axlar?
I mean, for Cosmos ecosystem, it's IBC, right? Like, you know, if you build in, you know, on a Tendermint-based chain, like you should upgrade to an IBC and then you can talk to Axlar and then use Axlar as a routing layer to talk to other ecosystems that don't have it supported. So, yeah, I think that's effectively integration.
I mean, technically, what would you pitch a project that says, you know, oh, we've deployed a Solidity smart contract and we're looking to expand to other ecosystems, but I need EVM compatibility? What's the kind of lift for them there if it's only Axlar that's available?
Yeah, sir, you mentioned like I deployed Solidity where?
Let's say like on Ethereum.
Yeah, and you want to talk to other EVM ecosystems.
Or like I built a smart contract on Ethereum and I'm trying to expand to other compatible ecosystems, including Cosmos. Is Axlar itself enough?
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah, so in that case, essentially, what you do is you have Axlar sort of gateways that are deployed on these different ecosystems, right? And you as an application can use the gateway to read and write information and tell where that information needs to go, okay? If it's a Cosmos chain, you know, ERC-20 or whatever token transfer, you send it to the gateway, Axler picks it up, understands it, which, you know, Cosmos chain needs to get this asset, routes it and delivers it, right? So let's say like you have UST on Terra, you can either start from UST on Terra itself and then talk through IBC with Axler and then use Axler to push it, let's say, to an EVM chain or Avalanche or the other way around, right? Where if you have an application, then you can use the gateway, push a message there. That message could be a token transfer or something more generic. The Axler will understand where you want to go and be this delivery layer along the lines.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think through how that would work. So like, let's say if I deploy an app and I want to access the Cosmos ecosystem, so my app is deployed as an Avalanche smart contract. And yeah. Let's say I want that asset to be routed through Osmosis so that yeah. Osmosis can help my users swap into the token that they need for my app. And then once that happens, then they could just like go back through Axlar into my like Avalanche smart contract or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And so in that, the whole point is that the Axlar in that case becomes sort of this translation layer, right, across these different ecosystems. And that's, again, like a key point that we've, you know, we had to build is that, well, okay, if it's a translation layer, again, like you want to make sure it's kind of buildable and customizable and you can translate new types of messages, right, as you continue building, like, you know, for token transfer, it's a message. There is a, you know, a standard of a token on the Cosmos ecosystem, right, that we use to transfer assets. There's ERC-20 on Ethereum, and then you need to translate between them. And so you can use the Axel network as this translation layer along the lines.
But that's really powerful. Yeah. I mean, a light bulb just went off because that would mean that if I wanted to build any application and have it be compatible within the Cosmos ecosystem, it doesn't necessarily need to be a Cosmos-based app. Like it doesn't necessarily need to be built with Cosmos SDK or CosmWasm. It could just be deployed as an EVM app on any existing chain. And for that to be routed through Axlar into the Cosmos ecosystem.
Exactly, exactly. Wow, right. And that's why we have to make important, like the building blocks really have to be modular to make these things happen, right? Like, so if you have another language or another ecosystem that you want to talk to, you should be able to go ahead, you know, build your own kind of a module just to support it, but you don't have to rebuild this connectivity with five other ecosystems that speak other languages, right? Like Cosmos, Ethereum, EVM chains, or whatever that is. And so you can kind of keep on growing and have more and more connectivity through this communication layer.
WhisperNode asks, I noticed a shift in Axlar messaging from focus on being a trustless bridge to more of an interoperability platform. Can Sergey explain what brought upon the shift and what the vision is?
Great question. I mean, I think, you know, as we're building over the last year, I think recently we just sat down and kind of figured out, A, what we have done well, right, with our stack, and B, where we want to get to. I think from day one, as we kind of designed on building Axlar, our goal has been, A, make it easy to build new connections, B, allow anybody to leverage it from it and allow this application composability. And so in that process, again, what we have done well is that really building the core building blocks that are needed to achieve those two goals, right? And so we looked down and said, well, okay, Axlar is becoming more of this kind of collection of the building blocks and a platform. And, you know, Bridgen is just an application of it that you can instantiate using this framework.
WhisperNode also asks, would you recommend running each chain on a different machine that you support as a validator?
Great question. I think in general, yes. You know, if you want to support multiple chains, you have to think a little bit. I think I can't answer this like very generically for all of the chains that you support. Some of them have different resources, so you have to go, you know, one by one. But you should certainly, you know, give it some separation. And the reason you need the separation is because, you know, if one of the chains that you're supporting as a validator goes down, you still want to provide connectivity for the other chains. You still want to be able to, you know, route assets and kind of participate in the consensus and so on and so forth. So you should definitely think about this kind of separation.
Last question. Is there any work on Bridge with Monero? Is it possible to consider Monero architecture?
Yeah, great question. I think in general, bridging with privacy, kind of preserving assets is a great question, right? Like, what do you get from it at the end of the day? We haven't looked too deeply at Monero specifically, like as a stack. I'll have to take a look if we, you know, if there's any other like signature support we'll need and things like that. But at the end of the day, it will be possible. It's just a question of like, what are the building blocks that we need to add to support Monero?
Monero is a crypto node fork, by the way, not a Bitcoin fork. Might be difficult to integrate that, but who knows? Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much, Sergey. That covers all of the questions that we got from the audience. Where can people find you and find Axelar?
Yeah, so you know, to find me, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Sergey_NOG. You can follow us on Axelar Core Twitter handle, and you know, definitely take a look at the website, axelar.network. There are various links to Discord, to Telegram. We have a testnet program. We just opened up a kind of community, another community program earlier in the week. So many ways to get involved, start building, you know, from tooling, dashboards, running validators, kind of help us really scale interoperability. I think this is really, like I said, our goal is to just see a lot of ecosystems and applications thrive. And I think it's a fascinating journey together.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning into this episode. I sincerely hope you found the information contained in it educational and useful for your personal learning development. I understand that the space moves so fast and there's too much information to digest sometimes. My goal with Interchain FM is to serve only the highest signal information in easy to digest courses so that you're not overwhelmed with TMI and leave only with context that matters. Interchain FM airs live every Thursday on my Twitter handle at CHJANGO or on Chango and Chain's YouTube channel. If you miss our live sessions, you won't miss a single episode when you visit interchain.fm. I hope to see you at the next show.